Hero IndyCar podcast with Kirby and Justin. Kirby, how are you?
Hanging in there, Jay. How about yourself?
You know, as you know, I took a little trip to feel the vibe for the upcoming Harvest GP in Indy. So I did spend a couple days down there trying to get a feel for the extent of the vibe and how big it was.
Spent a lot of time walking up and down Main Street and Speedway, did you?
Pondering. Yes. Thinking and pondering, looking for evidence of vibe. Outside of hearing a commercial on Q95 with Colton, Herta, and Michael Andretti for a food bank, I didn't feel like I heard too much in the way of vibe felt too much in the way of vibe.
It's sneaking up on us. Let's just put it that way.
Well, we still got some time. We still got some time.
We got 3 days. It's Friday is not quite an unofficial holiday yet here in Indy for the Harvest GP on Friday, but maybe we'll build up to that in the years to come.
Wow, could we get any more sarcastic?
Well, have you figured out what channel the USA Network's on your local TV there?
Is that it's going to be on the USA Network? Is it
on Friday at 3:30?
Kirby, I think we can talk about the. Upcoming Harvest GP. I don't think there's any point in like doing picks because you just basically recycle your picks from the last GP they had in Indy this year.
Sure.
Maybe with a little bit more knowledge of who won and who did well. I do want to start out. Well, let's start out with sponsors. Neologic beer. Can't get any more environmental than Neologic. And South Street Diner, Boston, Massachusetts. Kirby, if you don't mind, I'd like to start off the podcast with an apology.
Okay.
And I would like to apologize for episode 20.
Okay.
Which was just horribly dull. And I fell asleep editing it. I fell asleep re-listening to it. And it was horribly dull. And I'm going to try to be a bit objective about this, Kirby, and blame you. You started off talking about fuel saving.
See how boring it is? It even makes our podcast boring.
A horrible, horrible subject. And you delved into other minutiae. And, from now on, the fuel saving subject matter, I believe, should be banned. The other thing I'm going to suggest, it was also our longest podcast, at least before I edited it down, and it still, I think, was our longest podcast. I think we need to recommit to the tight 20. I just think we're better there.
Commit away. Recommit away.
So I want your buy-in on this, Kirby. I don't want you, sandbagging me or sabotaging me or mentioning, throwing in fuel-saving questions whenever you can. Recommit to our audience to be less boring.
I'll find a new boring subject to tout.
Well, it sounds like on the basis of your letters to Robin Miller and his reply, you've already hit two right there.
Well, I can't remember the last time I got a meaningful reply from Robin, so it's hard to tell.
That's true. But nothing like going back like a couple of months and trying to resurrect some controversy out of it.
I wasn't complaining for or against. I was curious about Hinchcliffe's remarks on NASCAR or whatever it's called, NBC Gold. I thought that was interesting. I just was curious whether they were true or not.
Well, apparently you are a party of one to that group.
I still find it bizarre, but that's okay. Here and there.
Yeah, fuel knob. okay, Kirby, let's talk about something that maybe I think is a bit more interesting. And really, for our listeners here, if they are not already tuned into this, maybe should be tuned into this. I think it looks like Dixon's gonna do this thing running away, Kirby. I think that's fair to say. I mean, He's a very strong favorite at this point. But I think maybe the interesting race to watch these last few races here is the race to not be on the bottom for the leader circle money. Because one of these teams is going to go without the $1 million or so leader circle money this year if they place 23rd. So, Kurt, we have the bottom four, which are Zach Veach, Marco Andretti, Carpenter number 20 machine, and the Foyt number 14 machine. One of those four is likely to be losing out on the leader circle money. And it seems like we've seen some moves by some of the teams to protect that. And, namely Foyt putting Bourdais in the number 14 for the balance of the year. And Zach Veach being replaced, at least for the Harvest GP, by Hinchcliffe. Am I being too cynical to say, Curve, that that some of these moves were at least in part predicated upon making sure they didn't end up in 23rd?
I think you're spot on. It makes all the sense in the world. Really, Foyt's going to great lengths. I kind of wonder how much money Foyt's spending, because he's running a third car now for Kellett in the 41, I think, and putting Bourdais in the 14. So he's going to run three cars for three races. And I wonder how that nets out in terms of money saved next year versus money spent this year to get there.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, obviously, Kellett probably paid for his ride. It's $1 million.
What's the cost to run three races?
Well, that's precise. Well, two of them are on the same weekend. Okay.
And right down the street from your shop. So maybe.
Right down the street. So let's call that one a cheap one. But yeah, St. Pete's not going to be cheap.
Right.
So there's probably something to the whole, we want to get a start on next year with Bourdais.
I guess you got an engine lease too, right?
And I guess the other thing is, what, if anything, I mean, Marco, they're obviously not going to replace him. Is Carpenter going to do anything? Although it's really not the Carpenter road course car that's been underperforming, let's be honest.
Yeah, I suppose the killer is Carpenter going out at the beginning of the 500, right? The double points race.
Well, and he did not show himself well in almost any of the other races he did this year, Kurt.
10 points at Indy, the double points race. 10 points at the first gateway and 9 points at the second gateway. 7 points at Iowa number 2 and 15 points at Iowa number 1. Maybe Daly can pull their bacon out of the fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been Ed Carpenter's performance. Say what you want, but that's the reality of it. And I think you and I have discussed already that Carpenter should be at least starting to look at himself and really deciding whether or not he should be in that car at all going into in the future. I think
I could easily foresee an Indy-only future for Ed Carpenter.
Curb, other big piece of news since we've been gone.
Wait, I have a question now.
Okay.
So who's of those four, who's not going to make it? Who's going to be out in the cold?
Oh, good question. Wow, I'm going to say Carpenter.
I agree. The Carpenter Daily duo, I think, is going to be left out in the cold in terms of leader circle.
That'll be painful to that team, that's for sure.
I would agree, but you got Hinchcliffe, you got Bourdais, and you got Marco, who, I mean, I wouldn't put it past Marco to fail, but he has his moments. It'd be just like him to put up enough points here to hang on to those leader circle money.
I agree. Kurt, moving on, other big piece of news while we were away, the Nashville race. Any feeling there? Anything that you can say that hasn't already been said?
Well, I hope the optimism is well-deserved. I saw somebody that's an IndyCar fan drove the course on the streets around the football stadium there and across that bridge and around a block where they make a U-turn and then head back over the bridge again, and posted the video on Twitter or some other social media. And I was pleasantly surprised to see how wide that bridge was. It always seemed, when you first heard about it, seemed a little bit concerned that it might be too narrow to promote high speed passing, that type of thing. And but it's a really wide bridge. Should promote, you know, pretty good run down those straightaways. They have, appear to be fairly wide areas heading into the turns at the end of each straightaway. So so it's possible they could put on a really nice show there.
Kerba, as an aside, what do you, I know I have this answer at the tip of my tongue. I'm wondering if you do. The worst ever designed temporary circuit.
There's so many to choose from. I'm going to say San Jose.
Okay. I agree. That wasn't a particularly good one. But I think the worst of all time was Danica Patrick's new boyfriend. Mario Andretti designed Houston.
Did Mario design that?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, really? No.
Do you remember that? Like one short straight, 90-degree turn, one short straight, 90-degree turn. It was awful.
Is that the one they were racing at when Frank Keady had his accident?
No, it was before then.
I think older
it was
one?
Like downtown. Yeah, the older downtown circuit or something like that.
I have to be honest, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was not Mario's finest moment, and his very short-lived track designing career. But that's a good one, San Jose. That you're right. That was another not great course, which I attended at least one of the races, maybe a couple. Yeah, look, interesting. But I don't think Nashville is going to be one of those. I think it looks like a pretty interesting circuit, and I think it has a better chance of surviving than most of these circuits do.
Yeah, I mean, I might go peruse the hotels online one of these days here soon and see if I can make a reservation.
Get in while you can. Get in while you can.
That's right.
Kerb, any other topics you'd list to bring up here?
Well, let's see. We had Oliver Askew driving how many races with a concussion before holding his hand up and saying I might need some help here. Interesting selection in Castro Neves, I think, to take over that car the rest of the way. Do you see any foreshadowing in that move or just an available driver on short notice?
Well, if you see foreshadowing, then you have to question the whole story to begin with. In other words, is there anything wrong with Askew?
Well, I mean, I guess to me, foreshadowing is, do they want to run a third car and they want to put Helio in it? I guess somebody's article there on racer.com implied a reason for stress on Askew's part. I don't know if that was deserved or not, but what do you think?
Look, great team. Askew was put in a very fortunate position considering, you know, his past. You know, it wasn't, you know, him and Award got an incredible opportunity to be on an incredible team.
Sure.
And, you know, you'd have to argue Award has made more of that same opportunity than Askew has. So if you're, you know, McLaren, Arrow, Schmitz, Peterson, I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to say, oh, well, I'll just have a third car and it'll be for Helio. But, you know, look, there's financial realities to all this, too. And it's like, how much, you know, the financial reality by them might be, hey, I'll just stick with two cars and I'll put Helio in the other one.
If you had to make a guess, is this just a simple replacement while the guy's hurt? Or is it more sinister than that? For lack of a better description.
I'm right on the edge there. I really am. And the reason I'm hesitating so much to make the answer, quick answer, is that I got a question at this point. You know, you talk about JPM or Helio or, you know, any of these guys who are quasi or have one foot out the pasture, if not both feet. Whether or not they're going to be able to perform at the right level and, you know, for a full season. So, I'm going to say there's nothing sinister in it, but if Elio is able to kind of show that he can perform at the highest level, that he has a shot in just taking SQ seat outright without the third car. How's that?
So then SQ has reason to be concerned in your mind.
I think anytime somebody's driving your car, you should have reason to be concerned.
Just like Days of Thunder.
I don't remember I'll say yes, but I don't remember the reference. But
Cole Trickle's got a concussion, and that blonde-headed guy takes over his car. Next thing you know, he doesn't have a ride anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't think you want to ever get up your ride. I mean, I think that's one of the hardest things for a race car driver to do. And because no real good can come out of it. Even if the guy does terrible, that doesn't necessarily enhance your position. And if the guy does great, it just makes your position way worse.
Right.
Kobayashi Maru, no win scenario.
Reprogram the test. All right. So any other silly season topics on your mind?
Well, let's just end it here, Kerb, with a comment, if you will.
Okay.
I know I was blasting you pretty good at the beginning for mentioning fuel savings and immediately setting our podcast on a horrible path down a boring road. But I got to say, I've gone back and listened to some of our old episodes, and the amount of times that we predict the future on this podcast is worthy of note, especially going into next year where there's going to be some gambling and so forth. This may be a good place to tune in if you want the latest tip. And I will just give you a couple of examples of this. One is our talking about Zach Veach and what his future may hold relatively early in the piece, and now has come true. Right down to preseason picks where I picked VK to be the rookie of the year and Dixon to be the winner. And maybe I'm spiking the ball before I get in the end zone here, but I'm feeling pretty good about both of those.
Well, VK doesn't have to worry about asking you anymore, that's for sure. And who else we got here?
Palau.
Oh, Palau's faded here as the season's worn on. So, yeah, VK, well.
Yeah, thanks to Ferrucci, Palau's future is faded.
I mean, they're only two places apart on the chart, but they're still separated by 39 points. So that'd be pretty tough for Palau to overcome.
Yeah.
So I'd say VK looks pretty good there. Dixon certainly looks good. You think O'Ward can hold off Herta for third place?
With the races coming up, that seems a reasonable assumption that can happen. Andretti as a group is not generally all that good at the Indy GP, right? And that's two of the three remaining races.
Correct. Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I'd say that's a fairly reasonable assumption. Okay, Kerb.
Yeah, I'm going to call it for Herta. I'm going to say Herta takes third by the end of the season.
Okay, well, that means one of us will be correct.
Thereby upping our odds.
Okay. Well, Kerb, in the interest of a new commitment to a tight 20, I think it's time to end it there.
I'm going to throw in a multiple choice question that you can choose to edit out if you desire.
Okay.
Will Power wears a black racing suit for what reason? A, black is slimming. B, they are his sponsor colors. C, he is a serial pants sweater during races. Or D, none of the above.
I say B.
B, sponsor colors?
Yes.
There's probably some shade of truth in there. Maybe I should add in E, B and C. as reported, apparently Power commonly will wet the pants during a race rather than suffer any extra stress, and a year or two ago, I guess, at the St. Pete race. The sponsor went with gray colors, and it was obvious when he got out of the car they were going to have to change things up here the rest of the way. And he quickly went back to a black suit in race number two and has been in a black suit ever since. So,
well, there you go. I think that will be an excellent way to end it on. All right, Curb. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and good night.
Good night.